Welcome into the show. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis today. World's most decent sports producer, Diesel, here with me as well. Going to be a great show here today on Thursday. Some fantastic guests I'm going to tell you about in just a minute, including somebody coming in studio today. But first things first, I did hear from Mark Sturgis's wife, Teresa. And Mark made it through shoulder surgery today. Lots of bone spurs in there. The doctor said, man, Mark was in a lot of pain, clearly. They've got all that cleaned out. He begins his rehab immediately, and we hope to have him back as soon as possible. So if you haven't been following on the show this week or just haven't caught us any time recently, Mark Sturgis out with shoulder surgery. That went down today, and I am very pleased to report that he is feeling a lot better. So that's a good thing, and he's on a path to being healthy. Maybe for the first time in a while. You know, he had his back surgery last year, neck surgery, and now the shoulder. So let's get all that cleaned up, Mark. Let's get you back here as soon as possible. Hey, some good guests on the show today. I've got Fred Cunningham from WSPA Television coming on with me at 5:20. I've got Lawton Swan from Clemson Sports Talk at 6:20. And in studio, 5:33, last two segments of that hour, Doug Irwin, the vice chairman of the Greenville Triumph Soccer Club. We have professional soccer coming to Greenville very soon. Season starts in early April. Doug will be joining us here in studio, and we're going to open the phone lines as well. So if you've got questions about the stadium situation, they just signed a second player today, a guy named Jake Keegan, who will be a striker or at least a forward for the team. So that's good. They've got a defender now, and they've got a guy up front. So they're gradually piecing the roster together. The League One season gets going in late March. There's lots of stuff to talk about. If you haven't been following the Greenville Triumph for getting on board with them, definitely tune in, learn more about it. This is one of those things that if you don't get your tickets before the season starts, I think they're going to get two or three games into the season, and tickets are going to be hard to come by, and you're going to be kicking yourself. No pun intended. So we'll have Doug from Greenville Triumph coming in later on. Hey, I'm going to have the phone lines open first hour today, 844-477-3776. This is my first show of 2019. This is my first show since the Clemson Tigers became national champions again. So there's plenty of stuff to talk about today, and I'd love to hear from you. And you don't have to be a Tiger fan. Love to hear from you on the state of college football. All kinds of breaking news in college football today I'm going to share with you as well. We have four very, very interesting NFL games this weekend. And it's tough to pick some of the favorites in those games. We're going to talk about that a lot first hour as well. But hey, first things first, here's your chance at free money. It's the $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. The keyword this hour is victory, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. Text the keyword victory to 72881. That's 72881. Good luck to you, the $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. If you're a Clemson fan, have you come off the high of Monday night yet? A lot of folks I've been talking to, there's people in two camps. One, they're still just got a big, giant smile on their face, right? Couldn't be happier for the Tigers. Parade's coming up on Saturday. The in-stadium celebration on Saturday as well, which would be the perfect cap to the perfect season. Then you've got the other ones that still kind of can't believe what happened. It was the way they won, I think, that caught everyone off guard. And the fact that Alabama did not score any points for, what, the last, 43 and a half minutes of the game. And Clemson rolled off 30 unanswered points at the end of the game. Could have scored more. They called the dogs off in the fourth quarter. That 10-minute drive at the end of the game where they just kept running the football again and again, it's the longest drive in the history of Clemson football. They called off the dogs. They could have hit 50. They could have named their number almost, which is absolutely amazing when it comes down to a Nick Saban coach team. The worst defeat in the history of Alabama team coached by Nick Saban.
So I asked this question on Twitter yesterday, or Monday or Tuesday. Did Clemson play above their normal, what they usually play? And they played at an extremely high level all season long. But did they play up above that, or did Alabama play down? Or is it a little bit of both? And if it is both, which side does it lean to?
Well, what did the Twitter poll say? What was the answer? The
Twitter poll said Clemson played out of their minds.
What do you think?
I think it's a little bit more of Alabama playing down. Like I said, Clemson has been playing at a high level all season.
Yeah.
You can never say that anybody plays a perfect game, but out of a 10, Clemson's been probably riding at an 8.5, 9, 9.5 all season long. And I think they finally hit the 10. in that game. They played a dang near perfect game. And Alabama, who's been playing at an 8.5, 9, 9.5 all season long, I think they dropped to about a 6.
I think that's fair.
For their level, for what Alabama can do.
Did Alabama just play poorly because, or did they play poorly because they were getting whipped? I mean, to me, I guess that's what the question is. Is it Clemson that made them play bad, or did they just play bad? And I think a lot of it is the schemes that Clemson came out in. They made some early adjustments on defense after that first long touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy. After that, Alabama didn't really do a whole lot for the rest of the game. They made the right adjustments. And the biggest thing to me, Diesel, Clemson manhandled Alabama on the line of scrimmage on the offensive side and the defensive side. And that's the biggest piece to me. Did Alabama see a team as physical as Clemson during the season? I'm not sure that they did. So the physicality that Clemson brought was a surprise. Man, the offensive line, unbelievable. Maybe the best offensive line performance that I've seen a Clemson team have. And I talked with Jay Guillermo yesterday, former center on the offensive line, 2016 national champions for Clemson. I had him on my internet show, The Ring, last night, or Tuesday night, and Jay went on and on about how well they blocked that Alabama defensive front. And, you know, Alabama's got some incredible guys on the inside of that defensive front. Not quite as strong, maybe, with the outside pass rush, but they did just a spectacular job. And if you had Trayvon Mullen as, you know, defensive MVP of the game, yeah, hats off to you. I hope you bet on that in Vegas, because nobody would have picked someone from the Clemson secondary to be the difference maker in that game. The much maligned Clemson secondary, they played lights out the entire game. Absolutely unbelievable. So I made some notes here. I'm trying to figure out the best way to put into perspective what Trevor Lawrence did this season and did in that football game. And it's really, really hard. He played about as well as you could play. He's 19 years old. He's a true freshman. Some of the throws he made were NFL-level throws. That last touchdown pass to T. Higgins, off his back foot, over a linebacker, threading the needle in between a safety and a defensive back, that's a Sunday throw. That's an NFL throw. There were a number of others like that during the game as well. And you got to be really concerned if Clemson is on your schedule, what I'm guessing is the next two seasons. I'm going to assume that Trevor Lawrence is going to play three seasons and go to the NFL. He's only going to get better. And all those weapons are coming back. Hunter Renfrow's leaving. Everybody else is coming back, unless we have a transfer that we have not anticipated. The next name I wrote down on here is Justin Ross. That one-handed catch that he made, is that the moment of the game? You know, when you look back at the 2016 national championship and they're showing the little montage, they always show the touchdown pass to Hunter Renfrow at the end, as they should. They always show Deshaun Watson, you know, either cradling or, you know, signing or kissing the trophy. Those are the two moments. What are the moments from this national championship game 2 years from now that they'll be showing? It may very well be that one-handed catch by Justin Ross. And an emotional Christian Wilkins after the game as well. Those, to me, are the two that jump out the most, I guess. Justin Ross maybe breaking a lot of receiving records at Clemson, and that's hard to do. He had an incredible freshman year. Really, maybe Sammy Watkins, the only freshman wide receiver. I know he had higher yardage numbers and touchdown numbers as a freshman. So there's a high bar set, but Justin Ross looked unstoppable. And again, a true freshman. He's 19. T. Higgins, 19. How are you going to stop that? T. Higgins was the next one I wrote down. Some incredible blocks on some of the runs during the game. Go back and watch a couple of those runs by Travis Etienne. He didn't get loose much on the touchdown run a couple of other times. Very solid. And, of course, he had the late touchdown. I also wrote Tanner Muse on here. Tanner got absolutely burned early in that ball game on the long touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy. He bit on the double move, easy touchdown. After that, Tanner played a heck of a game. And they moved him down in the box more. And he had a huge hit on Tua Tagovailoa on that fourth down run that kept him just short of the chains there. I think that was late third quarter. That was a big play. And again, your ability in the secondary to shake off a mistake and to come back and play at a high level, incredibly important. Before I talk about Brent Venables, hats off to Tony Elliott. He called an incredible football game. And Clemson picked up a lot of their yards on third down in passing situations. And he did it really well. They were committed to the pass early in the ballgame. And I was interested to see how that was going to happen, right? Clemson has started slowly in a lot of games this year. And in a lot of those games, they were relying on the run a lot, being very conservative, trying to throw some very safe passes to see what the defense is giving to them, those type things, right? That did not happen on Monday night. Great game by Tony Elliott. And Brent Venables, I got some statistics all around on this game coming up in the next segment. Brent Venables, how can you, I mean, he is almost, the number two highest paid coordinator in college football? I think the LSU defensive coordinator is paid higher. Yeah, that needs to change. Just an incredible, incredible scheme. And again, giving up the run, trying to make Tua have to execute 3, 4, 5 consecutive plays again and again every drive instead of just going for the big play and the home run. Keep everybody in front of you. Make him work for it. Let the defensive line get in there and rattle him. Blitz some guys. Man, defensive back blitzes. Haven't seen much of that this season. Saw it a lot in the game, and it was very effective. Congrats to Brent Venables. Man, absolutely unbelievable. And then two more names I wrote down. Tua had a rough night. And there's some stats floating around out there now. If you look at the three games where Tua played against top-level defenses, he was mediocre at best this season. At best. When he played poor defenses, unstoppable. So do we need to reevaluate Tua going into next season? I don't know. It'll be interesting. But think about the rough 6 weeks he had. I mean, he had the Heisman Trophy halfway into his trophy case. Then late in the season, Kyler Murray makes his big run. Then Tua has a terrible game against Georgia. And again, I know he got hurt and he went out, but he was completely ineffective before that. And Georgia did a lot of the same things that Clemson did. Try to keep everything in front of him. Get some pressure on Tua. When Tua had pressure on him, he was not throwing the ball well against Georgia or Clemson. It's as simple as that. Then he finishes second in the Heisman Trophy race, has a great game against Oklahoma, did not play well against Clemson at all. Clemson had his number. Alabama's not going to play many teams in the 2019 football season that can get consistent pressure on Tua. But if he does, let's see what kind of adjustments he can make before next season. And then Quinnen Williams said after the game that he wasn't all that impressed with Trevor Lawrence. All Trevor did was throw up 50-50 balls and his guys made plays. Yeah, Quinnen, we don't need to hear anything like that. First of all, if you're a defensive lineman...
Sour grapes, man.
It is. And if you're a defensive lineman and you're rushing the quarterback, how can you tell what kind of routes are being run and what kind of passes are being thrown? Did he immediately watch the replay of the game in the 15 minutes after the game before he made those comments? Give me a break. It was sour grapes, and I was disappointed. You know, Quinnen Williams, the same guy who started to badmouth Kyler Murray, if you remember in the press conference that week. He was like, yeah, Kyler Murray, he's not all... And he stopped himself. So some media training, I think, for Mr. Williams will be coming down before next season. I was a little bit disappointed to hear that. And there were two things that really stuck out to me about the comments made by the coaches. One by Dabo, one by Nick Saban, that I think are fascinating. And Dabo said something in the post game that was the single most important thing discussed the entire day, before, during, or after the game, that a lot of people haven't latched onto yet. I'm going to tell you what that is coming up next. What is the most important thing that Dabo said on game day? I'm going to tell you about that coming up here in just a second. Hey, the phone lines are open, 844-477-3776. Get in if you want to talk college football, anything on your mind. Man, there's some unbelievable NFL games this weekend. We're going to talk more about that later on this hour. Good stuff there. Hey, let's go to the phones right now. Delvin wants to get on and talk college football. Delvin, what's going on, man? What's on your mind?
First of all, great to talk to you guys today. Couple things. First of all, man, you talking about the coaching carousel. What about the player transfer carousel? Now we got Tate Martell, who's in the transfer portal now. If I'm telling you right now, Ohio State could be in trouble because if Justin Fields don't get his waiver and Tate Martell transfer, they're going to have to go to a different quarterback. And D, I want to get your take. What do you think about Chip Lindsey coming to your conference now as the new head coach at Troy? What do you think about that hire? And also, I think I think Temple got a little sneaky hire, a sneaky good hire in Rod Carey. I did not see that coming from Northern Illinois. I think that's a sneaky good hire, even though people might say that's a lateral move going from another group of five school to another group of five school. But I think that's a good move by Temple. What do you guys think?
Yeah, hey, Delvin, as always, man, thanks for the call. Much appreciated. Lots of stuff to unpack there. I think the number one thing, and I'm going to talk about this later in the show, Tate Martell, Ohio State quarterback, he's been running his mouth a lot, basically saying, hey, I got this starting job, whether Justin Fields comes in here or not. Maybe not anymore, because his name's in the transfer portal. He may be leaving Ohio State. Justin Fields hasn't been cleared to play next year yet. He's making an official appeal to be able to play immediately at Ohio State. Hasn't gone through yet. So we'll keep our eye on that, and that's definitely something that I have teed up later in the show. So what did Dabo say that was the most important thing, in my opinion, during the entire game? You know what? I'm going to tease you one more time because we got another call. Panther Nation is on board. What's going on, my man?
How's it going, man?
It's going good. What's on your mind?
All right, man. I'm just going to call in. I'm going to just make a couple comments, and I'm going to get out. I know some of the Bama fans out there listening, you Tennessee ball fans, I'm going to tell all y'all something right now. Let me tell you something. You can say what you want to about Dabo Swinney. That man got more junk talked about him when he took that job than any coach I saw in college football in the past 10 years when he got hired.
Yep.
Number one, the man is not just producing NFL football players and national championships. It's just like he said in the press conference. He said, if us as coaches are not teaching these young men how to treat women, how to be husbands and fathers, and how to be real pillars of the community when we get out and we out in here in society, then we are not doing our jobs. That's why Clemson is winning how we're doing. That's why we are where we at. Because it don't matter if Dexter Lawrence ain't there. Because as long as we got Dabo Swinney, Brent Venables, the coaches that not only care about our players on the football field, but they care about how they're going to do in life. That's why Clemson is succeeding. Alabama, all the rest of y'all cats, get up on what Dabo's doing. Because all I can see from the Alabama sideline was a coach and a team that looked defeated before halftime. ESPN family, I love y'all. Y'all have a great day.
Panther Nation bringing it strong. And it's hard to disagree. I agree. Dabo has weathered the storm. And there were times a couple of years early on there. I mean, the stories, you know, about Terry Don Phillips holding on to Dabo when Dabo thought he had lost his job ends up being one of the best decisions ever. And I agree, man. The body language on the Alabama side of the field from the beginning was odd, to say the least. Nick Saban going for it, fourth and one from what, his own 37-yard line in the second quarter? To me, that signified the fact that he did not think his defense could stop Clemson for the rest of the day. Desperation is how it felt. That fake field goal, is that the worst special teams fake of all time? Now, Kirby Smart's was bad in the SEC championship game. Clemson was in cover two. They were waiting for the fake. And you sent a kicker who is, what, 6 foot, 180, ringing wet, as your lead blocker for your slow holder to run behind? No. Terrible. It's Panther Nation, I think you're right on a lot of that stuff. Here's the most important thing that Dabo said before, during, after the game, in my opinion. And I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not going to try to do a Dabo imitation because I would not do him proper service. Dabo said multiple times in the post-game interview right after the game finished, I can't wait until Friday to get my team together for next season and do this all again. Friday. That's tomorrow. That's 4 days after they won the national championship. Dabo's going to celebrate. He's definitely going to be celebrating in the stadium on Saturday. Already looking ahead to next year. If you were on Clemson's schedule next year, that should concern you a great deal. There's no resting. There's no, hey, we made it to the top of the mountain again. Let's gear back. I really almost felt like Dabo was saying, let's gear up even faster now. We can be even better. I'm ready for next season. To me, that's the biggest takeaway from Monday. Not resting on his laurels. Ready to go. More energy than ever. Think about how tired you were from just staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch that game and celebrate and had to get up the next morning and go to work. Think about how tired you were. Now magnify that by 100, and that's probably how tired those coaches and players were after that season, after the Cotton Bowl and the national championship game. It's a good tire, don't get me wrong. But still, you're low on energy. Not Dabo. Dabo's dancing around saying, I can't wait to get back into work and do this again. Scary thoughts for the ACC Coastal, for the ACC, and for college football in general next season. Bottle up that energy, Dabo. Keep it going. That's what you need to do. Nick Saban said something as well that really bothered me. And he said it, oddly enough, going into halftime with the interview. Clemson's running a lot of copycat plays, paraphrased again. Who cares? Who cares what Clemson's running? Why would Nick Saban even say something like that? You know, Saban's always had some issues, I guess, with this high-octane, throw-it-all-over-the-field type offense. First of all, if you look back at a lot of the teams he's lost to over the last 5 or 6 seasons, they all share that same characteristic. Dynamic QB, throws the football a lot, pushes the tempo, goes hard. Saban looks at that with disdain, even though his team was doing the same thing this year. On Monday, Clemson was just doing it better. And if Clemson was running a lot of copycat plays, what does that say about your team? Basically, if you've seen the plays before, shouldn't you be able to stop them now? Come on, Nick. I didn't like that at all.
It seems like even at the high level of coaching, at times, there's a lot. Obviously, we know there's a lot of ego involved when you get to high level coaching. Sometimes you just got to tip your hat and say, guess what? You beat me. You beat me. We've seen what you did. We're aware of this. We've drilled against this, and we still couldn't stop you. Just say it. Just admit it.
I agree.
Instead of throwing out some half-cocked excuse, admit that you got beat. And that's just me.
Haven't seen a lot of that from Saban or his staff or his players.
Well, he hasn't had to in a long time either.
Or their fans. I mean, a lot of Alabama fans. I mean, there's some that have come out and been like, hey, man, we got whipped. I get it. But a lot of folks are making excuses. Oh, Clemson played such an easy schedule that they game planned for Alabama all season and hid all these wrinkles and plays that they didn't have to run to beat Wake Forest, but they have to run to beat Alabama. So they had an unfair advantage. Hogwash. And again, I can't imagine how hard it is to be under that level of scrutiny in a game with that kind of pressure. And as you're walking off the field, and I've said this multiple times, the fact that Nick Saban or Dabo Swinney, when their team is behind at halftime, have to walk off the field and do a quick 90-second interview where they have no idea what kind of questions. You got a million things flying through your head. I'm sure you've made a mental list of all the things that you want to go and talk to your team about. And then somebody sticks a mic in your face and you got to answer questions. I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack, but I expected better from him. Hey, phone line's still open, 844-477-3776. Let's go to those now. We've got Bob who wants to talk Clemson Bama. What's on your mind, Bob?
Yes, sir. How are you this afternoon?
Doing good, man. What's up?
Wonderful. Listen, and Lonzo would testify this to because he follows me on Facebook. For 10 days or better, I predicted this game, but I predicted Clemson a 10-point or better win all along. People thought I was crazy, this and that. But here's why. I just think Clemson's a better team. I think Dabo knew it. I think the players knew it. I think the players that came back for this, they knew it. And after those players played a couple, three games behind Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I get the feeling that they thought, look, man, we playing with somebody behind us, like, you know, the next coming of Dan Marino. He's just that good. He don't get rattled. He's just in the game or whatever. So they had total confidence. And then you got Dabo playing it all up. Oh, we on the Roy bus, you know, we this, we that, and put all the pressure back on Nick. And I think Nick knew that Clemson was actually better. I don't think Nick knew that it would be this bad. And I didn't either. But I thought Clemson was at least a 10-point better team than Alabama. And I, for some reason, Vegas didn't. And now, when you look at the year coming up, you know, Clemson's losing a lot. Alabama's losing a lot. But I think GMAC even said earlier, this might be a year where Clemson goes into, okay, we just outscore you. And it looks like they can do that as well with the receivers they got. It all goes back to Dabo, and I'll be the first one to admit, years ago when they hired him, I scratched my head and I said, what in the heck are they doing? This has got to be crazy. And I griped about it. I really did for a couple, 3 weeks. And I said, you know what? Let's give the guy a chance. And then when I saw what he started doing, not just with making Clemson better and Creighton better and all that kind of stuff, but actually making the players better, graduating them, you know, teaching them life lessons, those kind of things, being the kind of guy he should be, man, he has made a difference. So the thing I saw on ESPN, I'll let you go with this. The thing I saw on ESPN yesterday was, I think even it might even be Stephen A. that said this. Well, has the guard changed? Is it now Dabo? Because it had been Nick. I don't know if it has or not. But I know this. At that point in time on Monday when Clemson got to that stadium, you could look and you could see they had no fear. They were comfortable. And Alabama was tight as a hat, man.
Great stuff, Bob. Thank you much for the call. And I want to talk about that. I want to get Diesel's take on it. We've got more folks joining us on the phone, so get in here before the lines fill up. 844-477-3776. We'll come back and I'll tell you, has there been a changing of the guard in college football? My answer might surprise you. Welcome back into the show. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis. Has there been a changing of the guard in college football? I'll tell you what I think coming up here in just a minute. And if you want to weigh in on that topic or anything college football related, phones have been ringing off the hook so far this show. 844-477-3776. Get in and let us know what you're thinking or ask us a question, whatever's on your mind.
The real question is, did Clemson play out of their minds or did Alabama choke?
Yeah.
That's ultimately what it comes down to. Did Alabama choke?
I don't think they did.
No. I think they just ran into a buzzsaw that they didn't expect.
Yeah. Lost on the physical front, lost on the mental front, and lost on the coaching front. I mean, Dabo and his staff outcoached Nick Saban and his staff significantly in that ball game. Significantly. Didn't expect to see that. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Vol Nation who wants to talk about the Clemson-Bama game. What's on your mind, Vol Nation?
Hey, family. How y'all doing, man? Good to hear from y'all.
Yep. Likewise.
Hey. Yes, sir. Well, you guys are hitting it right on the head, you know, but the thing about it is when I was looking at the game and I've been listening to a lot of radio stations and programs, and regardless of who they are, other than maybe some homers or some people just throwing out some numbers, you know, you look at Vegas and all that other stuff, everyone would always say they're mirror images of one another. They're mirror images of one another. That was the thing. You would try to pick out these little small little details that may give you some insight on maybe where they can win a battle here, there, and yonder. And that doesn't matter whether you're looking at, you know, listening to Alabama people or Clemson people or somewhere in between, SEC Network, it doesn't really matter, all right? When that game took off, and you guys are right, in many facets, they out-prepared and out-coached Alabama. But there were some things that happened that no one could have ever predicted. There's been Clemson's offensive line has been much maligned all year. They've been very inconsistent. Who knew that they were going to step up and keep Trevor as clean as they had. And in a sense, they outplayed the defensive line of Alabama. All right. Then who knew that Trevor Lawrence was going to outplay Tua? I mean, no one could have predicted. We knew that he was good, but who knew he was going to be that good and they would be able to execute in that manner, in that fashion? Who also knew that looking at the offensive line of Alabama, that Clemson's defensive line would penetrate and cause so much disruption, you know, that Alabama, you know, just couldn't function. And then it disrupted Tua's thinking. He was throwing in the windows that weren't there, you know. And so it looked like or, you know, overall that, wow, Clemson just came out and, to me, played an amazing game, you know. And I don't know whether if they're just that much better than Alabama or not, because there were some things that could have happened. I mean, when Alabama was inside the red zone, what, five times and only came away with one touchdown, they were still in the red zone, you know.
Yeah.
If they had scored, you know, it would have been a lot closer. You know what I'm talking about? But they stepped up, whether it was poor execution or whether it was Clemson playing great defense, they did what they had to do to shut them out, and they won the football game.
Great stuff, Ball Nation. And I agree with you. The only nuance that I would have to what he just said is I was not surprised that the Clemson defensive line had as much success as they did against the offensive line. Those guys came back for a reason. They had that game circled for a year. But everything else you said, I think, was spot on. There's just a lot of surprises in this game. A lot of surprises. If you're a Clemson fan, you walk away very happy. So, hey, again, if you want to get in on the phones with us, 844-477-3776, I ask you this before I answer it, Diesel. Has there been a changing of the guard in college football?
I think there's been an addition to the guard.
Okay.
I would not say there's been a changing of the guard, because as long as Nick Saban wants to stick around, Alabama's going to be great. Whether that's two more years, five more years, whatever he wants to do, they're going to be great. The thing is, Alabama and Clemson don't, at their core, they don't do anything that different from one another. Both schools have a mentality of creating good human beings, good, high-quality, high-character individuals, but they just go about it in different ways. Dabo is the kind of guy who will come up, put his arm around you. You know, he's gonna not be your buddy, but he's going to mentor you through whatever it is you're going through.
Yep.
Nick Saban is a hard-nosed disciplinarian. But they're both achieving the same result.
Yeah.
So, again, as long as Nick Saban wants to stick around, we're going to keep seeing this. These two teams are not going anywhere as long as Nick Saban is there. And if and when, well, not if, but when Nick Saban retires, the question is, will there even be a challenger at that point? Will there be any other school? Because we've seen how many of these other schools that are you know, ranked 3 through 10 at the end of this season. Any one of those teams really step up to you in your mind and say, this is the team that's going to challenge Clemson when Alabama goes away?
No, I'm going to talk about that a little bit
because
more in
the next
segment.
Because it's inevitable there's going to be some drop-off when Nick Saban leaves. It's going to happen.
Agreed.
I don't know that it'll be – they're not going to drop down to a 6-win team by any means. But they could – you know, you see them missing the playoff every now and again.
I like the way you put it. There's an addition to the guard. And I feel similar. I mean, now that you look at the last four seasons of the college football playoff, the records of Alabama are identical. The record of Alabama is identical to Clemson's record, 55-4. They both have two national championships. Clemson actually has four ACC championships. Alabama only has three SEC championships. There's no changing of the guard because Clemson's been there the whole time, and I think everybody finally realized that on Saturday or on Monday. I think they finally realized that the storyline and the narrative of the past four seasons was Clemson and Alabama, not just Alabama and everybody else. Even when this season started with Tua coming out of the box completely on fire, Clemson struggling with two different quarterbacks, trying to get their rhythm, it was Alabama and everybody else. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Round five next season. You can just about mark it down. The gap between Clemson and Alabama and every other team is still significant. The two best quarterbacks in college football next year are going to be Tua and Trevor. You got the two best quarterbacks. You've got the two best coaches. You've got the two best programs. You've got two of the best recruiting classes that are coming in. Who's going to catch them? This can't go on forever, but I wouldn't bet against round number five next year. I wouldn't. If you're somebody out there who would, I'd love to hear who you think's going to step up. Man, Oklahoma's bringing in some great recruits, but they still have no defense. They still have no defense. Do you really think Oklahoma's going to outscore Alabama or Clemson next year? Is their offense going to be that much better than those two incredible offenses? No. No.
Are you giggling at the same thing I am?
What?
The medical cart running over a soccer player's foot as he's down to
receive
medical treatment.
I didn't see it.
I didn't
see it.
You were looking up and you were giggling. I thought that's what you were laughing at.
Nope.
Sorry, I didn't mean to knock you off track.
No, that's fine. No, I was wrapping up anyway because there's one other team out there that thinks they belong.
And I'll tell you this,
in the top two that I want to talk about next segment.
If you count yourself a fan of college football and you don't want to see the two best teams match up again next year, then go ahead and turn in your fan card. I don't know what to say to you as a college football fan. You know, as we all are, if you're listening to the station, there's a pretty good chance that's what you tune in for, is for college football talk. If you don't inherently want to see the best two teams play for a national championship, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to say to you. You just want to see lower quality football games?
The first five game minutes of that game had three touchdowns in it. There were 30 points in the first quarter of that game. Well, first quarter and 35 seconds or whatever, the second quarter. It was 16-14. It was unbelievable. All right, let's take a break. And there's one more team out there, and that's why I think I was smiling, Diesel. I'm going to explain it to you. There's one more team out there that thinks it's Alabama, Clemson, and them and everybody else, and it's not. Welcome back in. Mark Childressen for Mark Sturgis. I'm going to tell you about the one team in college football that thinks they belong at the top, and they don't. And it's not going to get better next season. It's going to get worse. I did want to say this. Mark Sturgis went under the knife today. Rotator cuff surgery. He is doing okay, according to his wife, Teresa. And we'll be thinking about him. She's done a good job of getting out on social media and kind of spreading the word. A lot of bone spurs in there and a lot of stuff they had to clean up, which means that Sturge was in a tremendous amount of pain and did a really good job of hiding that. So, Mark, don't know if you're listening or not. I hope you're not. I hope you're sleeping or in some pain relief haze of some sort. But we'll miss you, man. We hope to get you back sometime soon. All right. So the Georgia Bulldogs. And this, I don't want to say this is personal for me because it's not. But I lived in Atlanta for almost 20 years before I moved back to the upstate in 2017. And that was a lot of years where I was told by Atlanta Sports Talk Radio that the Georgia Bulldogs were going to win a national championship. And they never did. And for the most part, they never got close. They got close last year. They blew it. They blew it again in the SEC championship game this year. But man, those Georgia players got on social media and all they did was run their mouths about not making the playoffs. Then when Notre Dame got whipped, more of it. These are the four best teams. You can go back. This stuff's in social media forever, right? Even if they went back and deleted it, there's screen grabs everywhere. Then Oklahoma got beat. And again, remember, Oklahoma was down, what, three scores at the end of the first quarter against Alabama? Here they come again. Then Texas happened. And you haven't heard much since then. And in the offseason, if you haven't been paying attention, their three best targets on offense through the air, they're gone. Two wide receivers and a tight end. Out. They lost a running back. Gone. And all these guys are leaving early for the NFL. Then the offensive coordinator leaves. And guess who the Georgia Bulldogs are going after? Kentucky Wildcat offensive coordinator Eddie Gran.
Kentucky was very impressive this year.
Their offense was not very impressive. They weren't. Their offense has been middle of the road or worse, in my opinion. And again, they've been relying on an all-world running back and a mobile QB, which is the exact opposite of what Georgia has right now. They've got the running backs. So maybe they want to focus more on the run game. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I just don't think that's the right way to go. Eddie Grant's offenses have finished in the 100s in total offense in the last two seasons. So they're not putting up the big numbers. And again, they are not going the way that everyone else in college football is going, including Alabama and George and Clemson. More throwing the football, more spread offenses, more run-pass options. Eddie Grant's not your guy. So Georgia comes within an eyelash or a fake punt, if you will, of picking off Alabama. Their coaching staff lets their players run their mouths for weeks. They get smacked in the bowl game. Bunch of guys leave early. New offensive coordinator. And oh yeah, their backup QB. Their QB of the future, Justin Fields. Guys, Justin Fields, in some of the recruiting rankings, was ranked ahead of Trevor Lawrence. In hindsight, at least so far, not looking like the right call. Justin Fields, gone. Headed to Ohio State. I'm going to talk about this more next hour because that's got a – there's a coaching carousel out there. Now there's kind of going to be a quarterback carousel, and a lot of these guys are going to dance and move and bounce around. It's all starting with Justin Fields. So when I go out on social media and I mention these things, Georgia fans very quick to correct me that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I don't see Georgia's team getting better going into next season. I see them taking a step backwards. And again, Georgia didn't play anybody all year. They got destroyed by LSU. They lost to Alabama. You could say moral victory. They lost to Alabama, and they got crushed by Texas. They scored late to make it close, or closer, but Texas smacked them. So their three biggest games of the season, blowout loss to LSU, 7-point loss to Alabama, 7-point loss to Texas. You lose a bunch of guys, you change out your OC, and you lose your quarterback of the future, and you're telling me that Georgia's going to be better and in the playoffs next year, or they deserve to be discussed in the same conversation with Clemson and Alabama. They do not. But if you look at all the preseason top 25s that come out already, who's number three? Georgia Bulldogs, in most of them. I'm not seeing it. It'll be interesting. I know they've been recruiting lights out. They lost a lot of talent going into next year. So they're going to have a lot of young guys really step up next year.
And I would love to hear a Georgia fan explain why.
Yeah.
They deserve that number three preseason ranking. Way too early preseason ranking.
SEC, baby. That's a good question. If there are Georgia fans out there, tell me why I'm wrong. I would be very interested to hear that for sure. All right, coming up next hour, we've got Fred Cunningham from WSPA joining at 520. Fred is hilarious. Can't wait to have him on. He's fantastic. He was out on the West Coast with the Clemson Tigers, did a lot of great work for WSPA last week. We've got Doug Irwin, the vice chairman of the Greenville Triumph Pro Soccer, coming to the Upstate. He will be in the last two segments of the next hour, and he'll be taking calls. So if you've got any questions about the Greenville Triumph or want to learn more about it, feel free to join and call us then. Going to be talking more college football coming up after the break.